Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. A story I had last week showed that the suicide rates are going up at such an alarming rate that the life expectancy, the average of, you know, how long you're going to live, as it's all tossed in, is going down instead of up because of the high suicides. Dr. George Pratt is a clinical psychologist. He's a best-selling author with a private practice in La Jolla, California for more than 30 years. He specializes in helping people resolve emotional blocks and achieve success. He specializes in mind-body techniques, hypnosis, psychotherapy, and performance enhancement. He has served as the chairman of the psychology at Scripps Memorial Hospital in La Jolla. On the staff, he's also a fellow of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, vice president of Making the World a Better Place Foundation. My pleasure to bring him back. Why is it taking you so long to get back on the show, George?
George, it's always good to talk to you. I think we've both been busy.
I think so, too. Well, it's good to have you back, and happy holidays to you and everything.
Nice.
This alarming report about suicides going up so high that is bringing our average life expectancy rate down. What's going on?
Yes, it is. It seems scary. We had, on average, since 2016, for example, 45,000 suicides. And in the age group of 15 to 34, suicide is the second leading cause of death. And that's really unfortunate. We've got one of the major factors is a dramatic rise in opioid addiction.
Oh, geez.
And there's lots of opioid overdoses that are going on. And there's a strong relationship with when we have economic downturns, there are more deaths to suicide. So if you're having financial problems, you want to be talking to somebody to help you manage the circumstances. But between these kinds of statistics and the economy and opioid addiction, it's very, very dangerous. And one of the problems with the opioids is they're twice as likely to attempt suicide as people who don't use them. So that's one of the reasons that our life expectancy is going down. It is going down, and we don't want that.
I mean, the healthy people, it's probably still going up with people who take care of themselves, but the average is coming down because of the high suicide rate.
Right. And the people that commit suicide, even though many of them, the majority, are not in any kind of therapy, upon more rigorous investigation, 90% will have evidence of a mental health condition, and they're not getting help for it. So that is between not getting mental health help and than being more vulnerable to opioids, they're in a very dangerous situation. And if you can imagine people in that age range and then having children and then they're left without a mother or father, it's a very sad situation. So we want to do something about it. We want to make statistics better and have us living longer and happier so that we have quality of life. And that's what I'm interested in, and I know you are too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the problems associated with suicide most frequently, you know, they start off with strained relationships, life stressors of some sort, finances, substance abuse problems is number four, and then physical health conditions. So suicide is an issue mental health professionals are saying, not only for the mentally ill, but for anyone struggling with serious lifestyle issues.
What do you think of assisted suicide?
You know, I know that that's been bandied around for a long time, and in certain situations, I could consider that as an option for someone,
yeah.
Not in California, but in other states, when there are no other hopes and they're in a certain condition that they can't recover. And
it's so painful. So painful.
And it's so painful. But many times people that are interested in that also have a mental health issue, and you want to deal with the mental health issue, so you get a clear perspective on what is it that's going to help this person the most. And you know, other states have been exploring it, and it's available, but it's complex because of so many different factors, but particularly for screening for mental health issues, and then also the influence of certain medications people are taking that can cloud their mind and affect their ability to think clearly.
Dr. George Pratt with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Doctor, when we take calls with you next hour, in addition to phone calls, is it appropriate to ask people who may have contemplated or attempted suicide to call? Is that something that we might be able to deal
Certainly.
With?
Certainly.
Okay.
I'd say whatever people are needing, we want to make the world a better place.
Because of the young people's suicide rate, and that seems to be going up as well.
Yes.
Can we blame social network for that?
You know what? That is a real factor, because there's a correlation between people that are on the computer and for an extended period of time watching other people do things.
Yes, and they get bullied in some cases too.
Yes, they do. And if you could imagine, if you spend more than 2 hours a day, and I think that's a very liberal amount of time, if you spend 2 hours a day, your risk for depression goes up significantly. You are not being active, you are not pursuing your life, you're watching someone else, and then you're feeling inferior because you're not doing anything. You're on social media.
I know when I pay a bill online, I get depressed.
I think that's pretty normal, George.
Jeez. You imagine doing that for 2 hours? Paying bills online?
That wouldn't be very good. I'd rather have people do healthy things, be out in nature, get some exercise, be out in what are called fractals, which are cues out in the environment that are irregular patterns that are very good for the brain, such as looking at leaves and trees and flowers, that those fractal patterns have a subconscious effect and they significantly elevate our mood. So fractals are your friends, not so much social media for an extended period of time.
Give us an example. Of course, you can't give us any names, obviously. Don't want them either. But of a patient or someone who came to you and tried to commit suicide. And how do you take them through a process to get them out of that mode?
Well, I've had people that are considering suicide. And what really happens, it's a undiagnosed depression. Now, some of the things that we do and is to help people rather immediately go in and look at what the triggers are for the depression. Many times, people will have failed on antidepressants. Well, the third book that we did, which was Instant Emotional Healing, helped identify how individuals can do various procedures and, let's say, tapping on issues that have been bothering them to clear them. It's a delinking of the emotional arousal with the circumstance. So the people that I have seen, when people have been depressed for a period of time, they've kind of given up. But if you can go in there and then identify what the triggers are, then you can treat them properly. So the identifying that is can be really wonderful. And it may take a little time, but there are techniques that even using some subconscious techniques, such as a method where you're using the body's energy system to identify when something happened in your life or what the trigger was, they might not consciously recognize that when they were 8, they were traumatized, and they remember at that point their father walked out on the family at age 8, and then they say, well, it's really no big deal, I've gotten over it. Well, what has happened is they haven't gotten over it, and then they've built other problems on top of that. So you have to go back to that earlier trauma to clear it, and then when you start clearing those, then people become very positive because they know there's something that can be done. And it doesn't have to take a prolonged period. Then they feel empowered and worthy to proceed. So that's the exciting thing, is we have tools. These are called energy techniques. So I personally do obviously cognitive behavioral, which is the traditional. You try to change people's thoughts by, in some conscious ways, and so to shift thinking patterns. But we also do EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is a rapid way to clear trauma. And when you can identify it, then you can clear it. Let's say a person, I saw a person a couple weeks ago that came in that had been in a airplane crash, and he was not the pilot. It was another circumstance, and the doors collapsed. They had to foam the runway. It was very scary. They thought he thought he was going to be dead, and he had been in a very agitated and a state where he was not thinking clearly. And his wife came in with him and said, "I had done something with her in the past," and she said, "You know, let George try some of these procedures." And when we had him think of the crash, and then do, let's say, tapping on certain parts of the body with feedback loops to the brain, that cleared in about 45 minutes. And there were some other things to identify, but the majority was cleared in a very short period of time. Then that gives people hope. What happens when people are depressed for so long, they have given up hope. But at least if they're willing to come in to see a professional or to a church pastor or something like that, getting some guidance and encouragement, that they can be helped. There are lots of tools available. There is also clinical hypnosis is a wonderful technique too. And then, as I said, the tapping and cognitive behavioral, and then the EMDR is wonderful.
I've known a couple people who have committed suicide in my life, George. I wasn't very close with him. I had worked with him, but his father had sold a bank, and they were multimillionaires, and he was himself. And one day in his office, he was in public relations, he put a shotgun to his head. Through his mouth and blew his head off. It just defied logic. Money's not everything, but he had all the money he needed. I do not believe he had any kind of disease or anything like that that was life-threatening. He had gotten married. That was baffling. And then I had another one, a friend of mine, when I was working in Detroit at a TV station. He was one of our sports reporters. His name was Dan Jameson. We called him Red Jameson because he had red hair. And eventually I moved on to Minneapolis and St. Louis as a news director. He got let go at the station. They just made a change and they let him go. And so he ended up not finding the job he wanted. He loved sports, got a couple obscure jobs in cable, doing some minor television, but not a lot. And one day he called me up, George, and said, "Hey, I need $350. Can you wire it to me?" And I went, "Of course, Dan. Of course. You know, $350. Of course." And I wired it to him. And then a couple days later, he hanged himself in his hotel room and apparently used that $350 to keep his life insurance policy current for his wife.
Mm.
Unbelievable. I had the...
So sad.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see that coming. You know, he seemed chipper when he talked to me. You know, he said he needed the money, and he was happy when I said, sure, I'll send it to you.
Well, he was caring for somebody else and then feeling absolutely desperate himself. And as I said, that's one of the, you know, finances is an issue. And then very frequently there'll be substance abuse or physical health conditions that other people don't know of, just in general. So that's why if family can support people, get them properly evaluated and treated, and if you don't know what to do, take them to an emergency room. Well, let them be worked up there.
Exactly. I want to talk to you a little bit about the skateboarder, Rob Drydock. And this is what's kind of funny. I was on his MTV show when it was Rob and Big.
Oh, really?
He came to Los Angeles, interviewed me, wanted to do stuff on the paranormal and stuff for his show. And that was years ago. But tell me about your relationship with him.
Well, that is so funny. Well, this was quite some time ago. I've been in practice in La Jolla for a long time. And so Rob, who is now 43, saw me originally, and I have permission to talk about this. In fact, he's been on the air being interviewed by so many people talking about me and what I did for him. And he is one of, as you know, he's one of the sweetest, nicest people.
Oh, he really is. He really is.
He deserves all the wonderful things that are happening for him.
And for me, he must have been about 28, 29 when he
I think he was about 24 when he originally came to me. And so he said, I know you've worked with some other people that I know, and they got a tremendous benefit, and I want you to make me successful. And I said, okay, all right, so we're going to unblock you for any subconscious blocks. And you know, he had a wonderful upbringing. He's from Ohio. But at that time, he had virtually no money. But he, you know, just was very determined, and so I worked with him.
Huh.
And he started just kicking butt.
Oh my God! His net worth now is about $50 million.
Oh, and more.
And so, more.
I mean,
that's right.
So it was just great. So I would do. He loved hypnosis, and he loved the tapping, I saw him regularly, and I still, you know, connect with him. And so he then developed the TV shows, and I actually was on one of his shows after Robin Big, and I was on Fantasy Factory.
Uh-huh.
He was so grateful for my work, so he wanted me to help his cousin, who was on the show legitimately, he was literally staring at walls. So there was an episode where Rob brings drama down to my office in La Jolla, and he said, George, would you work with him like you worked with me? And so they filmed it, and it was, I mean, he's just hilarious anyway. I mean, but drama, who was literally staring at walls, after that,
I'll have you. If you hold on for a second, George, we'll have you finish that story when we come right back. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Dr. George Pratt.